Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for downloading the show. This is the Eclectic DIY Show. My name is Eric. I'm your host. I have a YouTube channel and this podcast. It's all about what we think are interesting things. Today, Will and I are going to talk about smoked hard-boiled eggs, cutting wood, and Christmas cooking anxiety. Welcome, sir.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm fine. You're the one that seems to have this cooking anxiety, so we'll get to that later in the show.
Yeah, it's getting to that time of the year, you know. It happens to everybody.
This is our holiday show, our Christmas show, everyone. I'm not quite sure which day Christmas is. Is it Thursday?
I think it's Saturday, isn't it?
Oh, I don't look at the calendar anymore.
You actually might be right on what day it is, and I need to get my butt going because I haven't started Christmas shopping yet.
So you posted on the Weekend Homestead Instagram, is it called a feed or account, these wood-smoked hard-boiled eggs. And I was like, what?
A lot of people are like, what did you do to those eggs? And it all stems from, I have to give credit to my uncle. He competes in barbecue and contests, and he's won awards and things like that in the local Chicago area. And he came to me and said, hey, you should try this once. It's smoked hard-boiled eggs. And I'm like, okay, this has got to be a gimmick or whatever. And we tried them at his house. They actually made deviled eggs out of them, and they were really good. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start the process. But it took a long time to make them, so it was definitely interesting.
You know, when I saw those, I thought of, I'm going to mangle this. I don't know if they're considered Chinese or Japanese or just kind of poly-Asian, but they will take hard-boiled eggs and crack the shells slightly and then soak them in black tea, which I think has some soy sauce or mirin perhaps, or five spice. But anyway, you soak them overnight and they are delicious. So it's like a marinated hard-boiled egg. But the smoked egg, I was like, wow, that's totally Garden Fork. It was just like your gas grill, you turn your gas grill into a smoker.
So what we did was, actually, I have a Traeger grill. It's like a smoker. We use it at the resort to make our pulled pork sandwiches. And in the off season, I bring it home and we kind of mess around with trying different things on it. And this was one of the things we tried. It actually starts all the way back with the Instapot. So we make our hard boiled eggs in the Instapot because it makes them awesome to peel. Yeah. And once you peel them, it's a brown sugar and there's some salt and some other things that make a brine, and you brine the eggs for 12 hours. So you take the shells off, put the hard boiled eggs in the brine, and then let them sit for 12 hours and they absorb all this liquid. And then when you put them in the smoker, you actually do what's called a cold smoke, which is normally when you run your smoker, you're using it to help cook the product you're using and then smoke it at the same time. And that's what gets you that great flavor. There's usually a setting or a way you can run your smoker called a cold smoke where you get the smoke, but it's not hot. It's usually somewhere between 80 and 120 degrees versus, mm-hmm, let's say 250 is what you'd normally cook at. So then you smoke the eggs for about an hour. And what it does is it kind of dries out the outside of the egg and turns it a brownish color. And that's actually what gave them that brown color. And it has a little bit of a, the way I describe it is when you bite into a smoked egg, it gives you a pop. Like you normally you bite a hard-boiled egg and your teeth just go right through it. Because the outside of it has got that little bit of a, I don't want to say rubberized coating, but that outside part of it, it gives it a little bit different of a flavor, and you get a flavor on the outside, then you get the egg flavor on the inside, and it's actually pretty interesting.
Yum. I was immediately like, oh, I want that.
The thing is anybody can do it. I mean, you can just hard boil some eggs and then you soak them in. What it was I used about a half a cup of the sugar and salt to about a half a gallon of water and let them soak. And then you can put them on your Weber grill. You can put them on your home smoker. You could even, if you had, I know you smoked in a cardboard box at one point in time in, yeah, one of your videos, you could actually do that. The trick is don't smoke them for longer than an hour, because otherwise the outside of it gets really rubbery and really just kind of gross. So it was an interesting process. I learned a lot. I learned a couple things at the end, which was the eggs themselves are really good when they come hot off the grill or right away eat them. But then I thought, oh, well, I better put these in storage. So I put them in a plastic bag and put them in the refrigerator. Well, the next morning, because they were in an enclosed space, I don't know what happened to them, but the outsides of them got really greasy and gross, and I ended up actually throwing them out. So the thing I learned was you got to, you know, store them in some way that they have access to breathe. Otherwise, in that closed space, that smoky flavor all of a sudden kind of turns kind of gross.
I wonder if you could just put them on like a cookie grate and then put them in the fridge so that there's air circulating around them.
I actually asked my uncle how he stores his, because they'll make these for like a competition or for a barbecue, and then they actually make deviled eggs out of them. So if you've ever had deviled eggs, you just take the outside of the egg is smoked, and then you know, you do the stuff on the inside. But one of the things that they do is they store it inside the cardboard carton from the eggs themselves. So after you take the eggs out, you smoke them and then put them inside that cardboard, and it allows it to breathe, and that's what makes it so they don't get all kind of gross.
Yeah, the plastic zipper bag is not for everything.
Yeah, I feel bad. I ended up throwing out, you know, a half dozen eggs on it, but we'll try it again, and I'm going to try different smokes. And I guess if you use a darker wood like hickory or something like that, you get a really, it almost looks like a brown, like farm style egg when it's done, versus mine were kind of that tannish, kind of orangish color.
Well, I mean, Garden Fork's all about, hey, let's try this and see what happens. And we've seen what happens. That's a beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah, the next version of it, I'm going to attempt to probably shoot some video of it and make one of those little either Instagram reels or even a YouTube video of it, because it's something that I tried doing some searching online and there's really nobody out there that has anything. So I figured I could share some of that information.
Another way to cold smoke that I want to try is using literally a coffee can, some kind of metal can, and you fill it up with medium-sized wood chips or sawdust perhaps, and then you put that in some sort of a container, like a grill. You take your gas grill and you don't turn it on. You just, the gas grill serves as an enclosure. You take whatever you want to be smoked and you put it on the grate of the grill. And then right next to it, you put this coffee can on its side with the sawdust kind of piling out. And then you shove an electric soldering iron in the bottom of that sawdust pile and you plug it in. And that's your cold smoke.
Yeah, that works really well. One suggestion, make sure you take the paper off of the coffee can, because otherwise that paper, actually the glue on the paper, gets kind of into the smoke and gives it kind of a funky flavor.
Oh, good to know. There are actually some coffee cans that have are kind of shrinked wrap of the plastic label as well. So pay attention. Plastic would be bad.
Yeah, that would be bad. Don't use a plastic coffee can. You have to use a metal one.
Okay, after the break here, we're going to talk about wood processing, and it's not processing it for food, I don't think. So we'll be right back. All right, it's the end of the year, and you're thinking, you know, I'd like to donate some money. How can we help our neighbors? And the best way I have found is to donate money to your local food pantry. I mean, obviously, in what we're going through right now, people need food first. And I think your cash goes farther by donating it locally. So there is a nationwide nonprofit called feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Go there. There's a link for find your local food bank and then connect with them. Maybe they have a website. Maybe you could call them. I'm pretty sure they're going to take online donations. We have given several times to a food pantry in our neighborhood. And I know it's like hyper-local and our money is most efficiently being used. Consider giving to your local food bank, feedingamerica.org. All right, so Will and I were texting before the show and he said, let's talk about wood processing. And I'm like, that could mean so many things.
I actually shot some video. It'll go live on the Weekend Homestead and on the Bear Paw Resort this week, but every year we bring in this machine, and it's the gnarliest machine in the world. I mean, it looks scary when he's taking it off the trailer, but essentially this machine is a wood processing power plant. You set it up and you load in 8-foot logs, and out the other end you get perfectly split firewood. And it's the guy just sits on a bar stool in front of his controls and just presses a couple buttons, and this thing does its deal. And it ran all day, and I think we processed 26 cords of wood in 8 hours.
I have seen these. My neighbor has one. My neighbor owns 900 acres of woodland, and he likes machinery, and he has one of these. And it is, it's not the size of a semi-trailer. It's probably those shorter semi-trailers, you know, that you see, but it's big. And this thing will take longer original log leg that's not limited to 8 foot, but it basically, you set the length of the split wood you want. You want a 16 inch length, which is like a standard length a lot for wood stoves, and it cuts it, and then it splits it. And a lot of times the wood splitter wedge is actually a four-way wedge rather than a single way, so it splits the log into four pieces. Is that how yours was set up?
Actually, the one that we had a six-way splitter on it. And then on the other end of it, the neat thing was they had a conveyor belt that would raise it up in the air and drop it. So we'd end up with these piles that are 12 feet tall. You know, so the guy would set up the machine and he'd get everything going. We'd take the skid steer, pick up the logs, set them in there. It would pull it forward and it would hit this little stop. And the machine knew it would stop. And then he'd have to push a button for safety, you know, to tell it that it's safe to go. And he'd hold this button down, and then this claw comes down and holds the log, and then the saw cuts it. It falls into the hopper, and then the log moves forward. Well, in every motion of this thing moving, the next part is also moving. So when the next log comes in, the arm comes down, it holds it, and the log grabs it. Well, while that's happening, in the motion of it moving the log forward, it's also moving the piston forward to run the splitter, and it cuts it six ways. And then that moves into the conveyor belt area. Then that clears out the spot for the next thing, and it just keeps moving forward. And the trick is to just make sure you always have what they call wood at the blade, which is there's always stuff in the hopper pulling forward into the machine, because if that machine blade is not moving, basically you're wasting money.
That's amazing. Does it have like a dead man switch or a dead man pedal where the operator has to be present and holding down something, or with a foot pedal pressing down on something for the machine to work?
Yep, that's what that button is that he has on the control board. So not only does he have a lever in his left hand that he's using to, you know, move the log and, you know, move the keep the thing moving forward, but the second that the log touches that stop, there's a button that he has to have pressed, otherwise the machine won't go forward. So as long as he's there holding that button and he's moving the lever back and forth to, you know, keep the process going, because if, let's say, something gets jammed or something twists or something gets plugged up on it, he can let go of the button. That blade goes instantly into like a shroud that makes it so it won't move, and that blade will not move until that button's pressed again.
How cool is that? I was just wheeling around my Troy-Bilt, which is a Garden Fork sponsor. I got a log splitter from them, the big kind where you can tilt it up and it's on a trailer, a little trailer wheels, but it comes with just a single wedge. And I imagine there are some aftermarket companies that make a four-way wedge for your average tow-behind log splitter. Have you ever tried one of those?
I have, actually. I had a wood splitter. I actually have the same Troy-Bilt one. I ended up winning one of them in one of the contests that you guys had online. But I learned there's all different tonnages. Like, I think the one that you and I have is like a 27 ton. I read online that you actually shouldn't run a four-way split unless you have a 36 ton. So it's something about the amount of back pressure with the piston pushing forward. Because I thought immediately, hey, I'll find one of these shrouds you can slide on there. And everything that I read said that basically, if you're under 30 tons, you should only do a one-way split versus a two-way split because of the amount of back pressure.
Interesting. Yeah, I have no complaints with mine. It's we were cutting, we dropped a big ash a while ago, and I had 8-foot lengths, and I let them sit for a while just because I was busy. And I cut them up the other day in the 16-inch giant wheels, basically. But you can tilt the splitter up, so we just could basically muscle the big round on the ground, and it just goes whack, whack, whack. And it's a neat cathartic kind of work to just split wood, because you have to have ear protection on eye protection, and it's kind of a zen-like process. So I like splitting wood that way.
I will say that it's interesting when you bring out the wood splitter, even like the processing machine. You know, if you had a mall and you were doing it by hand, nobody ever stops by to, you know, help you with that. But it's funny, I put out something online that I was going to use this machine, and all the neighbors are standing there watching, and they got their beer or their whatever, and they're watching the machine run. And then like when you run the wood splitter, you always get a couple guys that come around and want to help, because it's a neat thing to do and it's kind of fun. So it's a good thing to do in the fall and early winter. It's probably the best time to do the splitting is right about now, actually.
What is your take on splitting wood that is green rather than dried?
So it's a very good question, because when I used the Troy-Bilt splitter, I found my best success with dry wood, at least a year. So as long as the wood has been sitting for a year, it seems to split it a lot better. It doesn't get all stringy, and for whatever reason, the machine doesn't work as hard to do it. When we did the wood splitting machine, the processor, I don't know if you know this, and I think we've talked about this before, I now have a wood boiler on one of the properties that we have. Right. So I had the guy, I said, can you make some 30s for me, which means cut them in 30-foot length or 30-inch lengths and then split them so we have these really big logs to put into the wood boiler. And we actually ran wet wood through that, because you want to have stuff that's got a higher moisture content when you're running a wood boiler, because it burns slower and that's what you want, so you're not always feeding the thing. And the machine, I asked the guy how it works, and he said his best result is doing dry wood, but because the piston and everything is so strong, it has no issue pushing through the wet wood, but he wouldn't recommend doing wet wood with a consumer one because it doesn't have the same amount of pressure as what a commercial unit would have.
That's been my experience as well, especially with hand splitting, you know, which I love as well, because you're whacking the heck out of a log. And when you get the swing right, it's just this neat motion. You're like, it's kind of like when you can really hit a baseball at 90 miles an hour, or at least my middle age equivalent of that.
Okay. So while we're talking about this, I figure I'll ask you, do you prop your logs on another log and split with them all that way? Or do you do it right on the ground?
No, I prop them up. I think, I can aim better. Is that the thing?
Gotcha.
I think my swing, the ideal part of the swing is where the log I'm splitting is propped up on something else rather than going all the way to the ground. It's also easier on my back.
Yeah, no, I've noticed the same. The other thing is it's a lot easier on your maul too, because you're not driving it into the dirt over and over again. But I see guys do that all the time where they're splitting right into the ground, and I always wondered why they did that, because doesn't that wreck the maul?
I don't know. We have to go back and talk about chainsaws in the next episode or two. Not right now, but I keep getting information fed to me by various people. So
I consider myself somewhat of a chainsaw expert now, because we rounded up all of our chainsaws between the resort, all these different properties we've purchased, and I owned 11 chainsaws at one point in time. 11.
All right, we'll have the chainsaw show. That'll be after Christmas. So
I'll probably get another one for Christmas, so...
All right, we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about cooking anxiety. So Will texted me after we said we'd do the show and did our topics, and he said, wait, can we talk about cooking anxiety?
We don't talk about feelings very often, but I think this is a real thing. You know, you have some people coming over. I'm going to have my parents come over and a couple other folks, but you usually buy, you know, a lot of people will buy something nicer for the holiday season, for Christmas or something like that. They'll do a roast or they'll do some kind of shellfish or they'll do something. And now you're the person cooking this food for everybody. And sometimes the anxiety of getting it right and am I going to do this and can I get all the parts done and all these people in my house and crazy Uncle Eddie's over there and all this other stuff. And I really think there's something called cooking anxiety where you're worried about how it's going to turn out. And you can take the fun out of cooking because, you know, you're worried about how it's going to finish.
Oh, I was just joking with you, but I get that all the time. My way of eliminating that is I just strive for one pot dinners. And if it's in the Instant Pot, even better.
So for the holidays, we're going to do, I like to do extravagant cooking during the holidays. If you've ever followed us on Instagram or anything like that, that's when I pull out the big, you know, rib roast or, hey, we're going to try lobster this or, you know, this year I'm going to make a bacon wrapped turkey breast that's rolled with like a rosemary breading on the inside of it. And, you know, these are a little bit more complex dishes than just, you know, mac and cheese or something like that we'd have during the week. And I always find that, you know, you can let cooking get the better of you. And sometimes it's best to, you know, take a walk outside away from it for a couple of minutes or anything like that, or, you know, write down what you're going to do and how long it takes so that you're not scrambling to figure out, you know, how long do I have to put that in the oven for, or how much time or what temperature do I have to hit? You know, a little planning before you start seems to alleviate that a little bit.
A bunch of the top food cooking sites have articles and videos about how to plan your holiday meal. And it just seems like the main thing is to, you have your drop dead time, you know, when you want everyone at the table, and then you step back from that time and figure out, okay, the turkey gets cooked then, I can make my potato au gratin the day before, that kind of thing. I'm into simplifying. It's kind of funny when we have had group dinners at other people's houses, I am in charge of deep frying the turkey, which everyone else either has an issue about or a fear about or think it's complicated. It's the simplest thing in the world, and you get to sit outside and drink some Amaro or bourbon or something while everyone else is running around fretting. And I'm just like, okay, we're frying a turkey, you know?
And I agree with you. And I think the other thing is you have to understand that accidents are going to happen. Like there was, towards the end of summer, we had a fall thing at our house and we made potato soup and it was going to be kind of the star of the meal. Well, I opened up the Instapot, everything was good. And it said, put a little bit of pepper in at the very, very end. So I grabbed the shaker and I went to go put in the pepper and the top came off of it and all the pepper in the shaker dumped into the soup. So then all of a sudden, you know, like everybody's eating and like, wow, this is really strong pepper. I tried to pick out as much as I could, but it's soup. You can't do, it's just impossible. And you just got to come clean and, you know, people ask if I'm going to have the pepper, you know, potato soup again, you know, and it's just, you know, they give me a little bit of ribbing on it, but stuff like that happens. And it's just, that's the way it's going to be. And, you know, you just kind of roll with it.
Does your family help you do the cooking or are you the one man band?
I get a lot of help with all the side stuff, which I think is an important thing when you're trying to lower your anxiety about cooking is, you know, delegate a little bit, you know, have Aunt Edna do the salad and, you know, have your sister-in-law, you know, get the veggies in the microwave or, you know, those types of things so you can kind of focus on the main part of it. And it seems to work pretty well by doing that. If you try to do it all on your own, sometimes that's where it gets a little overwhelming is all the little mundane tasks of putting everything together versus cooking the main part of it, the main dish, you know, that can be part of it. So if you can break that up a little bit, that helps with, you know, keeping it easy, you know.
This is not an original thought, but that I like that you're trying to cook other things other than the turkey, because I think turkey, to me, as a holiday meal, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving, a lot of it's 90% of the time it's underwhelming to me. You know, it's this kind of bland meat.
I don't know. Like this year we have I'm going to do a rib roast. I've been working on some mock burnt ends that I've been cooking on the grill. So I try to incorporate different things, and I'll get out the cookbook about a month before the holidays. And usually our guests are here for a couple days, so I get a couple shots at making a meal. So if I screw one of them up, I can redeem myself with something later. And, you know, I'll try all these different things. And I think people like the fact that when they come to our place, it's not just turkey dinner. It's, hey, we're going to try this, or we're going to try that, or, you know, these different meals that you don't normally would have even or cook at home. And I think that's the one thing that I think people really like. So think about that when you're planning your meal, is maybe pick something that's a little bit oddball and people can try it.
Last night I tried, I think I saw this in a video on food52.com, which is a really nice site I like. I kind of sort of know one of the founders of that site, but they made, and I didn't know this existed, but there's a renowned Italian cookbook writer named Marcella Hazan, or Marcella Hazan, depending on where you're at, where you are in the world, as to say it. But she has this incredibly simple pasta sauce, which is either fresh, ripe tomatoes or a can of like plum tomatoes, a stick of butter, and an onion sliced in two. And you put all that in a pot and let it simmer for a half hour to 45 minutes with the lid off, and you salt it a bit, and that's it.
That sounds fantastic.
And I made it last night, and I was like, it was okay. I think I could have salted it better. I didn't need a little more seasoning at the beginning. But it was so darn simple. And the can of tomatoes I used was not a – I don't think it's a great brand. I got it – you can buy them at Costco. So I think that Muir Glen brand of the organic canned tomatoes would be better. I think the tomato really makes a huge difference. But it's so simple, and yet it really allows the tomato flavor to come through. And you could, I just like tomato. I just like pasta sauce on pasta. It doesn't have to have a vegetable or meat. It doesn't have to be a bolognese, you know, meat sauce or whatever. I just like a simple red sauce with pasta sometimes, especially in the winter when it's 0 degrees outside. So you could serve that for Christmas.
Absolutely. I mean, Christmas dinner doesn't have to necessarily be always the turkey and the Hallmark Christmas card, you know, accoutrement that goes along with it. It can be other things, and it's okay to expand your horizons on food. So it's something to think about. I just thought we'd talk about it, considering, you know, we're coming up on the holidays here. Have one other item for you. I have a interesting kitchen hack that I found out about this week. Nah, I wouldn't say kitchen hack, but it's a food hack. Which is, I was at the butcher shop getting our roast for Christmas, and I was talking to him, and he said, you know, due to the virus and due to everything else, the sales of, you know, some of the more expensive cuts of meat are down because people aren't having these big get-togethers. So the retailers are significantly discounting the meat right now. And I went back and looked at what I can get prime rib for the resort. And I looked at what the grocery store was selling it for, and they're selling it for $2.50 to $3 cheaper than I could get it at cost right now, just because they have to get rid of their inventory.
Wow.
Something to think about is, let's say you're getting a 7-pound roast for your whole family and all the guests and everything else that are coming for holiday. One of the things he suggests is, we'll get a 10 or get a 11 and then cut a section off and then wrap it up, vacuum sealed, and put it in the freezer, because sometime in the middle of winter or maybe in the spring or something like that, you can have a little rib roast for your family, you know, outside of the normal when the grocery stores aren't selling it. And because everything's so discounted right now, it might be a good time to buy a little bit extra and store it for another day.
Wow. I did not think about that.
Huh? Yeah, we ended up getting a couple extra ones, and I just got my vacuum sealer out and we sealed it up and got it ready so I can just put it in the sous vide when we want to do it sometime in the spring.
I actually sous vide'd a strip steak. It's called a New York strip, which is a smaller steak, because the camera operator is not a big red meat fan. But I was going to donate blood the next day, and I always like to have red meat beforehand because it raises the iron content of your blood. And I think the blood people like that. I donate blood at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Manhattan now because two of my friends are being treated for cancer there. And I'm like, okay, this is my way of saying thank you to that. But I use the Instant Pot sous vide feature and it was so simple. And then I literally just took it out of the, I get the local farm raised meats that are, the steaks are frozen and they're already in a little vacuum seal pack.
Sure.
And I literally just throw that, I try and peel the label off, and I throw that in the Instant Pot, set it for sous vide of, I think it was 45 minutes at 135 degrees. And then I just ran it, and then I took it out, and I hit it with a propane torch. I didn't put it in a pan. I just hit it with a propane torch to sear the outside. And it was delicious and really, really simple.
You and the propane torch. I'm telling you. I bet your neighbors look outside and see you out there with that torch cooking things like that. They're like, what is Eric doing now?
It's okay.
Hey, we have some new reviews on iTunes, which is something we really love. So big hint, if you'd write a review for us, we have, and make it 5 stars. That way I won't have any anxiety about iTunes review reading.
All right, let's hear the review.
I might have already read this one, but from Helen in Arizona, talking about the e-bike show we did, Rad E-Bikes. Great show. My husband and I have rad folding bikes that fit in the back of our electric car. That's my dream. Since we live in a rural area, we find it best to load the bikes and trailer for our small dog and drive to another location for a safer ride. We're able to charge the bikes from our small off-grid solar system. Wow. The rad bikes are amazing and given us lots of enjoyment. Hope you and Rick keep riding. And that was from Helen.
That's awesome.
I'm researching electric cars. If you have an electric car, I would love to hear from you. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. I already have the solar array. I'm like, why not have a solar car, you know?
You know what, actually, I'm looking forward to that I saw, and Elon had it in his presentation, but they're now looking at making quads and UTVs that are all electric, and I've been... not that I don't like the one that we have, but having one less engine to maintain is always better when you have a bunch of engines. And I've been looking forward to seeing the electric ATVs and UTVs coming out on the market in the next year or two.
I was in the hardware store and I saw electric battery-powered snowblowers.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
That's a thing. Another review from CC in Indiana. Great show. 5 stars. Hi, all. Love the show. Tell Rick to check out Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. I think Rick might already know about that, but Dan Carlin's Hardcore History is a deep, serious deep dive. The show is longer than the Garden Fork 30-minuter. 30-minuter? But yeah, if you're a history person, you should check out Dan Carlin's. And thank you, CC in Indiana, for the 5 stars. And Helen gave 5 stars as well. So nice, huh?
What a great Christmas gift for the Garden Fork radio show. 5-star review. Everybody do it this week.
Yeah, karma is boomerang. So there you go. Let me know what you guys think. If you have some thoughts about how to keep those smoked eggs from going awry, I guess is the correct word. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. You can check out Will at the Weekend Homestead YouTube channel and also on Instagram and Facebook. I like your Instagram feed the best. Just to kind of keep up with what you're up to.
I like Instagram because it's easier. Actually, I might start making little reels because those seem to be pretty easy to put together too. You can watch me dance my TikTok dances.
Yeah, thank you for putting that image in my head now. So, all right, you all go out and do great things. Remember, karma is boomerang. Will and I are going to stick around for the after show for the patrons, but I will see you next week. Thank you. Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. The music used in our show is licensed from uniquetracks.com and audioblocks.com. The executive producer of Garden Fork Radio is Jimmy Gutz. You can learn more about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. All right, we'll try that again. I'm going to move the microphone closer and push it down a little bit like that. 3, 2, 1.